You and I back together again, chatting it up on a Tuesday, November 19th, 2024, right here on Connecticut Today, where I open the show talking about comments from State Attorney General William Tong regarding some likely Trump White House immigration policies. State House GOP leader Vin Candelora dropped by to offer his thoughts on the Attorney General's statements. Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio detailed a push by state employee unions to preserve jobs, while CBS News correspondent Jake Rosen dropped by with the latest on the Trump White House transition.
So we've apparently already started the tap dancing, the old political soft shoe here, the cha-chas, I like to say. We've already started the word games, the 3D chess of how we use words to avoid talking about the real issue here. And I predicted this, and you and I have talked about this. This story broke late yesterday, and rather than get into it yesterday without a lot of time, I wanted to start the show with it today. And it was basically the Attorney General of the state of Connecticut, William Tong, who was the chief law enforcement officer in the state. Okay? So the Attorney General, the man who is voted in, I don't think these positions should be voted on in the state. I think we should do like other states do, and like Congress does, have a governor or a chief executive, you know, name somebody, and you quiz them in a confirmation process. But that's neither here or there. So here we have a guy with the job, the sworn job of upholding laws in Connecticut, and he gathers with a bunch of area mayors, the mayor of Hartford, the mayor of New Haven, I think the mayor of Norwalk was there. And they're basically telling the White House to back off. Mr. Tong yesterday was doing his best superhero imitation. And here's a quote from the Attorney General, William Tong. He said in part, quote, "Connecticut gets to decide how Connecticut wants to live." Now, what he should have said was, if he was being honest and forthright, he should have said, "Connecticut Democrats get to decide how Connecticut wants to live." Now, as we get into this discussion here, I want to be very careful about something. I will never demonize anybody who, if given the opportunity to get a better future for themselves, their significant other, their mom, their dad, their husband, their wife, their kids, if you are given, because of circumstances, a way to make that better, I'm not going to besmirch you. I'm just not. Now, it's another thing whether or not you should do that, whether you're showing the respect of a nation's borders and its laws. We can talk about that. But, of course, we're talking here about immigration and threats here so far. And as I told you over the past few days, if you think the election was contentious, wait till we get to this in a couple of more months. Threats so far of deportations, of who, I don't know. Now, you have some people saying, well, it's only going to be of criminal illegals. Okay. Then you have people saying, no, it should be all illegals. That's probably not feasible. But if any of the early posturing from Attorney General Tong and these mayors is an indication, we're just going to have this is going to degenerate here quickly. Attorney General William Tong, this story here from the Hartford Courant. Attorney General Tong and more than 50 immigrants, community organizers, faith leaders, and elected officials rallied at the state capitol on Monday, pledging Connecticut's commitment to immigrant communities. Now, let me stop right there. Let me stop right there. Again, we have what has happened here over the past few years, and this is another shame on you to people in my business. Because if somebody were to come from outer space or from another country and read this story, talking about Connecticut's commitment to immigrant communities. You would think, because of the wordplay here of this story, well, they don't like immigrants in Connecticut, which is the furthest thing from the truth. How many? I mean, come on. Could we please be honest about this and stop the toe tapping, stop the soft shoe, stop the shuffling here, the gritty dance, whatever you'd like to do. I mean, this is ridiculous. Yes, Connecticut does have a commitment to immigrant communities, but here's the thing. Several outlets, including the one I'm reading from, they go out of their way. Now, you may not like the wording here, but this is shoddy journalism. When you do not use the word illegal, or if illegal is too harsh for you, if you don't use the word undocumented, and believe me, I know for a fact there are reporters out there who are told, we don't use illegal in this operation, we don't use undocumented. But if you leave that word out, it completely twists the meaning of the story. So William Tong said yesterday, here's what he said. Now you have to understand something. The attorney general of the state is the chief law enforcement officer of the state. Here's what he said, quote, it is the policy and it is the law of the state of Connecticut to respect, honor, and protect immigrants and immigrant families here in Connecticut, period, full stop. Oh, tough guy there, huh? Well, yes, General Tong, and that's how you address the attorney general. You call him or her general. Yes, General, that's right. In fact, we do honor, respect, and protect immigrant and immigrant families here. That's not the issue. Stop, for God's sake, clouding the issue. The issue is, how did they get here? Well, that's not the issue, Paul. The hell it isn't. Now, we'll continue on this. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. All I ask of our leaders in Hartford and of our local mayors, just be honest. Just be honest with people. I'm sorry, but from an accuracy point of view, you cannot lump in together someone who may have crossed the border illegally, no matter how wonderful of a person they may be. You cannot lump them in with somebody who scraped and scraped and scraped and worked for decades to get the money to do this right. It is vile, and it is disrespectful of somebody who obeyed the laws. Joining us right now, Republican State House Leader Vin Candelora of North Brantford to give the GOP side to what was said yesterday. Hey, Vin, good afternoon. It's Paul here. How are you?
Good afternoon. Good. How are you?
Good, Vin. Couple of things. First of all, we had, what was William Tong, with all due respect to the office and General Tong there, what was he doing yesterday? Was this a line in the sand thing from, anticipating action from the Trump White House here? I know you and Steve Harding had a response to that. So let's start off with that, Vin. Vin, what were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just political gaslighting. Not talking about the real substantive issues. They're just going to try to ingratiate themselves into the immigration population and claim to be their champions. Meanwhile, they dismiss the important issues of public safety, mm-hmm. of the cost of migration into Connecticut, and they just want to talk about being the champions of protecting these individuals. But it is ironic because in the long run, they're not making the state of Connecticut safe by doing what they're doing.
The notion of what this costs, and Vin, I get a lot of calls here on the show, and people now know the number, 110,000, 120,000. Let's settle on 110 or 120. I think it's semantics at this point. But however, Vin, people, and I'm sure you hear it on your constituent emails and phone calls and all, people know that there is a cost here. And yes, people need medical care and they need to be fed and housed. But how do we deal with this cost here? And is it going up? Is it going down? What are the numbers here?
Yeah, I mean, the cost is tough to quantify. They argue maybe it's $1.3 billion for Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is it's changed the nature of how we deliver education. When you look at our school systems, the number of children with English as a second language mm-hmm. has posed a lot more costs and impacts into the classrooms. So it's not just costs, it's also the quality of life, the way our children now learn in schools. You know, all of a sudden now we have a housing crisis. That's become unaffordable. Rents are hard to find. The shortage of housing in Connecticut seems to correlate with the amount of immigrants that have come into Connecticut. But one of the biggest issues for me is that when the Democrats passed the Trust Act
in 2019,
what it essentially did is it gave this like super protection to immigrants that nobody else receives in Connecticut. So you have gangs that are moving in from Venezuela, organizing sex trafficking and you know, drug cartels. And what the law says is that our local law enforcement, our bail bondsmen, no one can contact ICE and work with the federal government until there's a conviction of that person. So you can't coordinate, you know, people that are on the terrorist list. Connecticut cannot coordinate with ICE to make us safer. It was really naive, extreme legislation that they passed. So people can't be fooled. This isn't about, you know, trying to help immigrants. It goes way beyond that. Even with health care, they didn't just give them minimum health care. They gave these guys catalog health care services that our own residents don't enjoy.
And that's the point, Vin. That's the point. Look, we all are in some way, shape, or form, whether we're churchgoers or synagogue goers or go to a mosque or a temple, whatever, or pray to ourselves. I think there's a strain that goes through everybody, Vin, in this state, that you want to help kids. You want to help struggling parents, especially if they come from another country. But as you said, and I was talking about this with somebody, the station here, they said to me earlier, they said, well, what about a legal citizen who can't afford some of that, who could never afford, right, for example, that medical plan, they fall in that black hole where they can't get cash food benefits. I mean, is this completely lost on a lot of folks, or is this just pandering?
It's certainly lost on the Democrats. They only want to see things from their own lens. So they're only seeing it from the perspective of immigrants. They don't see it from other perspectives. And so, you know, we could have a conversation about providing health services or providing, you know, protection, public safety. But it always goes to the extreme with them. And that's why I say they gaslight. They don't want to have an honest conversation. And unfortunately, a lot of people don't really understand the way these laws work and what that health care program is. When they talk about the health care covers, they act like it's emergency room care for people that are in dire need of it. No, that's not what it is. They gave these guys everything under the sun, from prescription drugs to eyeglasses. Mm-hmm. And that's stuff that our own residents don't get. We have to pay for those things.
What about the later pronouncements from two of your friends across the aisle there, Bob Duff in Norwalk and Marty Looney in New Haven? You know, Vin, I have to laugh because I used to hear former Governor Malloy, now in the hinterlands of Maine, use the phrase Connecticut values, but I hate when that's used that way, Vin, because it's like it's couching a thumb in the eye in a phrase. To me, this is only my opinion now, in a phrase that sounds so warm and fuzzy. And I read about that story today from yesterday, and I just had a chuckle a little bit. I don't know. That's just me.
Yeah, I mean, their value system isn't mine. They're the party of economic elitism. You know, they surround themselves with the billionaires. And then they encapsulate the very impoverished cities and sort of keep them in the dark of what's really going on. And then they just gaslight the rest of us. Their value system is not my own. And I'll say to Connecticut values, you know, when you're worrying about the residents of Connecticut, it can't just be one-sided and where you're only worrying about immigration. Their values is worshiping on the altar of government, bottom line. They love the power, they work it to their advantage, and they put all their trust in it. And, you know, I think that's why they're melting down, where we have a president-elect who's willing to shake up the status quo and not put everything into government. And so I don't share the same value systems as them, and whether I'm in the minority or not, I don't care.
Republican State House Leader Vin Candelora, North Brantford. Vin, thank you. Good to talk with you again, and we'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Take care. Thank you.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Megan Portfolio, Yankee Institute, the Hartford Portfolio. Ms. Portfolio, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. How are you doing, Mr. Voice of Connecticut?
I you like that. I'm trying to see if I can please Martin Looney and Bob Duff and abide by what they call Connecticut values. I don't know whether you saw that, but they were...
I have so much on my radar screen, and sometimes when this nonsense comes up, I just shake my head and swipe to the left.
Yeah, and we have our buddy William Tong picking a fight now with the White House, too. How about that? Well, you're going to have a lot to write about here in the coming months. Man, oh, man. Yeesh.
Oh, I know. They keep me employed, so I was going to, like, you know, the time that government starts behaving itself and does what they're supposed to do means I don't have a job anymore.
Yeah, I mean, you and I thrive on chaos. And speaking of chaos, you have a little piece, well, not a little piece, but you have a piece, rather, in your marvelous blog there, the Hartford Portfolio, about a relatively small amount of jobs, what, a few dozen, that, what, may get eliminated, and the state unions are not happy here. So fill my listeners in on that.
Yeah, this is another example of union shadiness that goes on in the state. So the Department of Labor, during the before times, they had a certain amount of staff available to handle unemployment claims. But then COVID hit, and the claims went through the roof, and they needed help. So they got federal funding to hire 49 people to help get through the backlog, which I'm totally fine with, and I think they did a great job. But it was federal money, and the time is up. The money is run out, and this was known beforehand, and they're going to have to lay these people off. But the agency, to their part, is trying to help, you know, place them within state or a job elsewhere. So it's not all lost. Well, enter the labor unions. They come in. The sky is falling. They're saying that there's a recession coming and that we need to have these employees on and we shouldn't be laying them off. And we need to all contact Governor Lamont and other lawmakers to keep these people on the payroll. But this is where the problem is, and this is why people should care. Mm-hmm. They're lying, and they're lying at the expense of the taxpayers because these were federally funded jobs.
Yeah.
If they were to all of a sudden turn into full-time, you know, regular employment, that means we're all left picking up the pension, the fringe benefits, and the salary. And they're lying because these jobs were never intended to be permanent forever till the end of time jobs. So they're lying. So my first issue is, if there is a recession coming, why are you encouraging the government to grow? Because we should be hunkering down and getting ready for bad times. Now, I'm personally not saying a recession is coming. This is from the union. The other problem I have with this argument is if there is a recession coming, the union is also in talks right now for raises, you know, for the next couple years.
Yeah.
So if we have a recession, is it really responsible to be pushing for more raises? And let me just give you a little glimpse into what the union has been receiving over the past few years. And my good friend, Ren Janke, he's the one that had come up with this and has been doing a lot of reporting on this. But since Governor Lamont took office, state workers have received a compounded 33% pay increase. That's 33%. I don't know one person out there that has gotten 33% raise in that time period, unless they have, you know, left their company or got a promotion.
Got a huge offer somewhere to go to another gig. Yeah, I get it. Yeah,
that's not the norm. And actually, the norm is in the private sector at the same time frame, we only received a 23.5% raise. Now, this is a national number.
Yeah.
But I mean, it just goes to show that if you put this in like high school terms, the people that sit at the popular table.
Yeah.
Those are the unions.
Yeah.
The rest of us, we're all in drama club. We're all, you know, sitting at our little table. I was in drama club, so I can say it.
Okay.
So we're all the big nerds. We're not the prom. They're the prom queens. They're the football stars. They're the basketball stars.
Wow.
And there's just the rest of us.
I like the high school analogies here. That's pretty good. Yeah. And for full disclosure.
I just came up with that one. I have Mean Girls on the brain.
Okay. For full disclosure, you were in the drama club and my son works on Broadway, actually. So that all works out. But, you know, having said that, listen, and I'm always careful to say, Megan, that this is nothing against individual union workers, many of whom,
correct,
I'm sure the majority of whom on the state level do a great job. But it's that constant expansion, and it's not just the salaries, you say. It's the outstanding medical care. It's the pension care. It's everything else. And what compounds some of this, Megan, as you say, and we've seen, you know, and luckily Governor Lamont has stood up to some administrators on this. This is one time, right? One time federal revenue. And how many times do we see people say, hey, as this is one time, as in maybe 1 or 2 years, this is not going to be permanent. But how often, Megan, do we see people basically not pay attention to that because they get drunk with the extra money and they hire people, right? And then they come back and say, well, you don't want me to fire those people, do you? Well,
government doesn't know how to shrink. All they know how to do is just grow and spend. That's what government does. And just like you see here, and yes, I'm not talking about the average union worker, because the union workers also, I mean, they have to pay their taxpayers, mm-hmm, as well. So this actually affects all of us, including, I'm talking about the union bosses, like the union bosses that I've seen all on social media all through October and November with the elections, out there door knocking for their candidates so that when session starts again, you know, prom king and queen, they get what they want, and then the rest of us get to just stand by and cheer.
So you must have been in when you were in high school. Were you interesting in high? What? What's oof?
Oh,
what's
I'll
oof?
Have to send you my high school picture 1 year. I used to think it was kind of cool to wear a pantsuit to school.
Yeah.
And this is why I sat at the nerd table. I looked like a real estate agent with my big 80s hair.
Nice.
Aquanet. Like, Mom, why would you allow this?
Aquanet girl. I spray.
Oh, Aquanet. Absolutely.
All right, you got to send me that. Megan Portfolio, the Hartford Portfolio, the Yankee Institute. She and her can of Aquanet there. Big here. Megan, thanks. Appreciate it.
Have a good week, Paul.
All right, thanks. Jake Rosen back with us from CBS News. You've had Jake on a few times, who is covering the incoming Trump transition to the White House. Jake joins us from Florida. Hey, Jake, it's Paul again in Connecticut. How are you?
Hey, good. Good afternoon. How are you?
Not too bad. Now, the campaign is over, and the last time you and I talked, Jake, you were scrambling to pack three different temperatures of clothes and making sure you have the four different USB cables. So has it slowed down appreciably, Jake, or not?
It has a little bit, but right, I think we have to remember that in a lot of ways, what the end of the campaign was the beginning of 4 years of a Trump administration. So we've seen these, you know, sporadic afternoon and late night, you know, appointments and some drama between, you know, different camps in Trump world over who's getting what position and stuff like that. So it's kind of morphed from, you know, campaign drama and campaign reporting to a little bit more of really focusing on the transition and what the next 4 years looks like.
Yeah, and as a guy you're talking to who used to be a street reporter and cover politics, right? I mean, look, you don't have to admit anything, but I just harken back to the days when you said what you said, like, oh, they're announcing this now? Come on,
yeah, exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Right, really? Can't they do this tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock after I've had my first cup of coffee? But on a serious note, Jake, a lot of these nominations that you're covering from West Palm Beach are stories in unto themselves, huh?
Yeah, they are. And I think a lot of it really comes down to kind of the coalition, if you think back to really what last week brought us, right, in terms of Tulsi Gabbard, Robert Kennedy Jr., Matt Gaetz, kind of 4 plus 5, maybe 6 years of kind of building this new Trump coalition of retaining some old allies like Gaetz, bringing in new allies like Gabbard and Kennedy, and then the promises that were made to them, either implicitly or in terms of Kennedy, really what he said on the campaign trail, almost every rally towards the end of what he was promising these people. So it's certainly been, you know, what these political backroom deals really have been kind of just really rearing their head in the last couple of weeks, especially when it comes to people like Kennedy, who, you know, just 6 months ago, 8 months ago, was really not affiliated with Trump and running against it.
Mm. Jake Rosen is the guest correspondent for CBS News, covering the Trump transition, one of the CBS team doing that. Boy, Jake, this Matt Gaetz situation, in fact, you guys at CBS reported a couple of hours ago that somebody may have hacked into his testimony, whatever. Do you think, and not trying to get your opinion here per se, but is there a buzz going on around the Matt Gaetz nomination for AG, Jake, that this is a favor because as soon as he resigned from Congress, that report could not be released? I mean, there's a lot of intrigue here, isn't it? Because I don't know about you, Matt Gaetz wasn't on the top of my list for the AG's position.
No, and I agree with you in terms of the timing, at least in terms of the ambition that Matt Gaetz can continue to still have, whether it's in office, whether he gets confirmed or not, right, in the Trump world and the influence, he maybe even more credibility, to be honest with you, that he gets since in the last couple of weeks, you know, tapped to lead the attorney general after Trump's been railing about it for the last couple of months. It'll be probably, if not outside of DOD, right, one of the most impactful positions and appointments that Trump made. And it's certainly in terms of this looming report, which I think, at least as a campaign reporter, you know, you don't always focus on everything on Capitol Hill. I was unaware of really the timing of all this in the crunch time, that all this investigation was basically fully done with a report ready to be released. And I think we have to remember, too, that what Trump wants and what the Senate wants to do are different, at least until proven otherwise.
Yeah.
And we'll see whether, you know, everyone kind of bows down to what Trump wants or there are, you know, a significant number of senators who can stand up.
Yeah. And Jake, that is going to be my last question here. You have a scenario here where you have enough, I think, a number of Republican Senate members who were not up for re-election this time around, who, if they want to, especially some of the older folks like Chuck Grassley and whatever, saying the heck with it, I'm going to vote no on one or most or all of these controversial nominees because the idea of retribution just doesn't scare them anymore because it's not practical.
Yeah, and I think we have to remember, too, that that doesn't mean that Trump won't go after them in different ways or that in the case of, you know, the political reality is that what they're saying now might be very different than after these, you know, secret meetings between Gaetz and senators happen on the Hill, especially with J.D. Vance involved. Mm-hmm. You know, do eventually some of these senators who are on the fence, or at least say they can't commit to voting for him, change their mind and do so later, realizing that, you know, bucking President Trump's, you know, immediate set of orders before even day one, right, might not be the best way to go about your life, the easiest way for some of these senators, especially some of the older ones or the ones who could be in very contentious races in just a year and a half.
Absolutely.
So I think, again, we have to remember that, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Jake, great stuff. Thanks, Jake Rosen, CBS News, covering now the Trump transition from Florida. Jake, be good. Travel safely. We'll see you down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. Jake Rosen, CBS News, digital reporter there, covering the Trump transition.